It's the Trupany Show with your host, James Trupany.
Hello and welcome to the Trupany Show. My name is James Trupany and this is my show. And today we are at New Beginnings, New Japan Pro Wrestling. We're in Sapporo for the first two nights. And to join me for this momentous card is Mr. Marcus Green of, now of, Total Wrestling Magazine. How are you, sir?
I'm good. Glad to be back. Talk about two great shows for New Japan.
Yeah, this was some interesting stuff. Last week you heard me, Alex, and Alex go through the card. So hopefully you can see what we predicted, because we kind of got it all wrong. but we'll go with the card from the very top, as we always do. We're going to go through every match on both cards. Now, this show was highly anticipated as the first big pay-per-view for New Japan Pro Wrestling in 2018, and had some very interesting results. Some things we were right on, some things we were definitely not right on. So let's go with night one. Michael Elgin defeats Katsuyo Kitamura as part of his seven-match challenge series. What did you think of this one, Marcus?
I liked it. I think it's obviously I've seen a lot of Kitamura, you know, as a part of last year, him going through the Young Lions undefeated, and now I think this is a brilliant way, really, to get him more exposure and to improve his in-ring, taking him against guys, mainstays on the roster like a Michael Elgin and others, because I think Kevin Kelly talked about this on commentator. They don't really do a series like this much, so you know they putting a lot into Kitamura, and I think it's warranted, as we're seeing him get better and better with these matches, and going against somebody like Elgin who can match his size and power, you know, it was something really cool to see.
Yeah, I mean, there were, as Alex alluded to last week, there's some questions of whether the New Japan should be employing Michael Elgin, but that's a whole different kettle of fish,
which
we won't get into today. But certainly, you know, it was good for what it was, and certainly does get Kitamura over as a powerhouse. Like you said, he went through the Young Lions Cup undefeated. He's had a good run last year, and he certainly was one of the standouts. The other standout from the New Japan Young Lions of last year, Kawato, has gone off to CMLL to start his learning excursion and is playing a blinder. Made his debut today for CMLL in Arena Mexico, which has got to be a big event for a young wrestler going to one of the meccas of pro wrestling. So we'll see how those guys do. We move on to the next match, which was Jushin Thunder Liger, Kushida, Hiroshi Tenzan, Ryosuke Taguchi, and Tiger Mask taking on Desperado, Taichi, Takamichinoku, Takashi Iizuka, and Yoshinobu Kanemura in a 10-man tag match. Suzuki-gun versus Regular Army did what it said on the tin. Interference led fun for 8 minutes and 6 seconds. It didn't really do an awful lot. What did you think of this, Marcus?
Yeah, a fun little romp. Always cool to see Liger. I think this is a really fun team with Liger, Kushida, Tenzan, and Taguchi, and obviously Tiger Mask is always an added bonus. But fun little romp, and obviously Suzuki Gun has always spawned some type of chaos, but they got caught up here, so that was fun, because I think overall on these two shows we was kind of trading back and forth to see which group would kind of hold supremacy, as we always are. So this was a fun little, you know, go back and forth.
Yeah, they do. It gets the veterans on the card, and it gives them something to do. One of the reasons, actually, just break back with one of the reasons why Yuji Nagata, you're not seeing him around at the moment. He's gone on an excursion to All Japan Pro Wrestling, where today him and Yun Akiyama won the All Asian Tag Team Championships at a combined age of 175. And Yun Akiyama has now won more tag team titles than any human being alive. I think he's won more tag team titles than Marty Jannetty and Shawn Michaels put together. That's one of the reasons why you're not seeing old Blue Justice anywhere at the moment. He's having a bit of a rest in All Japan Pro Wrestling. Okay, the next match we saw was Chaos, Tomohiro Ishii, and Toriano building up some tag team credit against Bullet Club's Chase Owens and Yujiro Takahashi, 7 minutes and 6 seconds. I really love Chase Owens, and he was absolutely great in this match. It's exactly what I expect from Chase Owens, trying to build his character a bit more. And he's kind of like outside Bullet Club in one sense. He's a true Bullet Club guy, you know, and he's kind of been taken under the wing of Bad Luck Fale and the Gorillas of Destiny, and he's kind of that side of Bullet Club, and he's cool. I like him a lot. And Yujiro's Yujiro. He did his Yujiro thing, but they've got great people to work with, Tomohiro Ishii and Tori Yano. So this was a lot of fun. I enjoyed this. What did you think, Marcus?
Yeah, same here. Definitely interesting pairing. I think this is one of my first times seeing the auspicious pairing of Ishii and Yano, which is really great. Now, obviously, Willow Club, we talk about this all the time on past shows about, you know, Chase Owens. If we look at, you know, Chase Owens, and I think on the Chaos side, we always talk about Dave Finley.
Yeah.
So, you know, those two guys specifically, and looking at this match, Chase Owens is a real thorough utility player for Bullet Club. Like we say, he's kind of outsider, but he's always there, but he seems like an outsider. So, you know, teaming him up with the, you know, Tokyo Pimp going solo in terms of kind of being out there by himself without the women. it's really cool seeing, like I said, pairing Ishii with Yano is always going to be up for some excitement, because you know one guy's going to do the heavy lifting and Yano's going to come and do vintage Yano. So
yeah, the Stone Pit Bull and the Sublime Master Faith were the best tag team names going at the moment for me. All right, next we move on to our first championship match of the weekend, which was a NEVER Openweight Six-Man Tag Team Championship. Bad Luck Fale, Tama Tonga, and Tangaloa, the Gorillas of Destiny, successfully defend against Taguchi Japan. On this occasion, Toa Henare, Reisuke Taguchi, and Togi Makabe in 9 minutes and 15 seconds. Kind of expected this. Taguchi is yet to find the magic team to dethrone Bullet Club. What do you think, Marcus?
Yeah, this is probably one of my favorite teams in terms of Bullet Club. Big fans of Gorillas of Destiny and Bad Luck Fale, I think, is the icing on top of that. And anytime you know, we get to see somebody successfully defend the six-man title, it's always a bonus for me.
Something slightly wrong when they successfully defend the titles. But then we have another six-man tag match, which was another Bullet Club versus Regular Army match. Dave Finley, Juice Robinson, and Kota Ibushi lost to a Bullet Club Elite crew of Cody, Hangman Page, and Marty Scurll in 10 minutes and 47 seconds. Just fun stuff that gets Cody over with his story against Ibushi even more, which plays into what's happened on the next night, on the Sunday in Sapporo. But this was kind of a nice layup to get Bullet Club over as the dastardly heels that they are against the fun-loving baby faces. Marcus, your thoughts?
Yeah, I like this. This is my other favorite trio of Bullet Club, because they have so much great chemistry, and that's, of course, led by Cody. Love seeing Hangman Page. I think he's been doing some great work in New Japan. And Marty Scurll is, you know, the villain, of course. You gotta love Marty Scurll. And just a great, like you said, six-man all around. Juice, Kota, you know, Finley, three more favorites. And fun little romp. But like you said, Cody got over. Just great work, character work as always. Going back and forth with commentary. God bless. God bless Kenny Omega. Oh, this guy. He's always on top of it. So, yeah, just seeing these three continue to build that chemistry. I love to see them go against, ironically enough, they're in the same group, but it'll be cool to see them go for the six-man, because I think they're a great team.
That might happen in upcoming weeks. We're not really sure where things stand with Bullet Club, but that's something to talk about later in the show. And you just love at the depth of this. You've got Juice Robinson, Dave Finley, and Kota Ibushi in the fifth match on the card.
Yep.
Oh, New Japan, you spoil us so much. Right, we can move on then to match six, which was Los Ignorables de Japón, Hiromu Takahashi and Tetsuya Naito. They defeated the Chaos team of Will Ospreay and Yoshihashi in 11 minutes and 19 seconds. But this really wasn't about winners and losers in this match, because this was setting up Takahashi and Will Ospreay to a lesser extent, which happened on the next night in Sapporo, but to a much greater extent, it sets up Naito versus Yoshihashi, which we'll see on the last night of New Beginnings in a couple of weeks' time. This was phenomenal work from Yoshihashi. So on fire. He was trying to get that babyface fire behind him, and it worked. This is the most aggressive I've seen him in about 3 years. He's finally woken up. And me and Alex have been cracking on about the Yoshihashi push to the point where it was kind of tongue-in-cheek, and this is actually the Yoshihashi push. We're seeing it right now. It was something to do for Naito, but they've actually managed to turn it into something entertaining and worthwhile. Marcus, what's your thoughts on this match?
Yeah, same here. And Yoshihashi, for me, I've always appreciated his work, but mostly being relatively new to him as a viewer, he's kind of faded into the back for me a lot. And I think that's why so much emphasis putting being put on him now with this, revved up attitude. But yeah, like you said, I think this match specifically on this card really signified why why we get these shows and these tag matches, to kind of show that tension building to these singles matches, and why these particular feuds coming off of, Wrestle Kingdom and such are important. Like you got, like you said, Takahashi, who was taking the back seat in that fatal four-way leading up to it, but obviously participated and had a great showing at Wrestle Kingdom. But New Japan always does a great job at sliding guys, back in the feuds coming off of those big shows. And I like the fact that Takahashi kind of has an obsession with the junior heavyweight the way the Miz does with the IC. I'm digging that. And of course, Will Ospreay, he's doing anything he can to hold on to that belt. And Naito, with these shows, Naito's just that guy. Like, he can aggravate guys even when he's not in the winning. Like, he'll get jumped after a match and then just get up and then just stand there. Like, with Jericho, like, this guy's, he's great. So I think that's another great pairing with him and Takahashi, because, Takahashi is super talented, but a lot of times he can be all over the place, which is, both a gift and a curse for him at times. So Naito's kind of that guy who's superbly talented, but also can stay cool, calm, and collected. So I like that tandem.
Funnily enough, I was reading Chris Charlton's Twitter feed this week, and he translated some interviews with Yuji, Hiromu Takahashi. And back when Takahashi was a young boy, he wasn't getting it. He just didn't understand how wrestling worked, and he was trying too hard, and he wasn't getting anywhere in the New Japan Dojo. And then Tetsuya Naito took him to one side and said, "If you don't mind, I'd like to show you how to wrestle, because it seems no one has." And that's where they became friends, and that's where they became this odd pairing. And it worked so well together, because in real life they are friends. Just as the Elite work together as a unit because they're all mates, they work together as a unit because they are friends, and that's why everything clicks for them. And as well, Evil and Takahashi were on excursion together, so they have a good, strong relationship. It's really interesting to me how, they've picked up on these personal relationships, and though their personal relationships are clearly nothing like their ring persona relationships, it really does bleed through into what's going on. Even the guys in Chaos, like Will Ospreay, is kind of like really close with Tomohiro Ishii, who he calls Ishii-san, and he's senpai, and Ishii kind of looks after him and makes sure he doesn't do anything stupid.
Completely different styles.
Yeah, so it is like, these relationships do go on behind the camera, which plays into what we see in the main event of the next night, which we keep hinting at, but we'll get to, because that's the exciting bit. Okay, then. We move on to the next match, which was Chaos. Gedo, Hirooki Goto, and Kazuchika Okada defeated Los Ignorables de Pahavan, Bushi, Evil, and Sanada, part of the current IWGP Heavyweight Tag Team Champions, in 11 minutes and 54 seconds. This continues the story of Chaos versus LIJ, the never-ending story of last summer, and now Chaos seem to be back on top of things as the things have settled down and the gold has landed in Chaos. It seems to have swung the pendulum the other way, because last summer it was all LIJ. So I've enjoyed these matches, and if there's two units that work together like a well-oiled machine, it's Chaos and LIJ. These matches are always so super smooth and so many cool spots in them, and they really, really tell a story. And it kind of plays against what Naito has been trying to achieve as a babyface. He's kind of realized that he needs to be a heel, and it's these three guys who are dragging him back to the fold to make sure he's still a bad guy, because when he started listening to the fans at Wrestle Kingdom, it all fell apart for him. What do you think of this, Marcus?
Yeah, again, this is another one of those matches that really highlights why these, these tag matches and these calls are important, because, like you said, it really just feeds off of stuff, like you said, from last summer and definitely coming out of Wrestle Kingdom, because now you have, Evil, who could have really faded into the background after, that whole stint with Okada, but now he's going after my boy Goto, and that's getting heated up. And of course, Okada is on a collision course with Sanada, which is going to be fantastic. But Gato's just really there to fill in third spot and look out for his boy Okada leading up to the match. And again, like you said, telling that story of, where we see Sanada kind of step up heat leading into that match, and obviously that will build more on the second night. But yeah, these two factions, fantastic chemistry, never get tired of seeing them fight. It's the kind of fight forever. type of thing.
So. Exactly. It would be fantastic to see these two teams fight forever. I would love to see it. Speaking of fighting forever, the other never-ending story, Bullet Club versus Chaos, was given another chapter in Match 8 with the Elite, Kenny Omega and the Young Bucks, defeated Chaos, Jay White, Sho, and Yo in the oddest of odd tag teams. Jay White being all surly and individual, while the well-oiled machine of Rapingi 3K buzzed around him, was quite a sight to see. 10 minutes and 53 seconds. I was wondering how Jay White was going to cope with these multi-man tag team matches, because he's supposed to be this dangerous individual loner, which, you know, you can't really be when you've got two fun-loving guys like Sho and Yo around, can you? What did you think, Marcus?
Yeah, Sho and Yo seem like two guys you definitely want to hang with, you know, going out somewhere. But yeah, now after watching the second card, I have to kind of revel in this this match with Kenny, Matt, Nick, perhaps for one of the final times, unfortunately. But yeah, it's always great seeing another great trio. And you know, like you said, I was interested as well seeing how Jay White would gel with Sho and Yo, because it really feels like it's really Sho, Yo, and Romero a lot of times. In match, because Jay White's kind of just very awkward against. You got this like killer with these three party guys. So yeah, I think it was cool, but obviously the lead had the better chemistry.
Yeah. Definitely. Then we get to the main event of night one, which was Minoru Suzuki defeating Hiroshi Tanahashi in 32 minutes and 28 seconds. By God, at 50 years old, the Black Veil really does have it, doesn't he?
Yeah, it's hard to complain with anything with you know, Suzuki. He's, like I said, he's an assassin no matter how old he gets. He's an assassin. He's an honorable assassin, specifically coming off of that, Wrestle Kingdom. But yeah, he's a villain straight up and down, going against, you know, New Japan's 100% ace. And I think this match kind of showed up, you know, that even Iron Man could, you know, be mortal. And I think this match definitely showed, between Suzuki's real grit and the way he just attacks relentlessly, and, you know, Tanahashi going as long and as strong as he has, I think time just kind of caught up with him. And I think Suzuki capitalized on him at the perfect time, switching it up with his arsenal, because even Don Callis has been pointing this out relentlessly, like him trying to transition from that sleeper and then going for the power driver. You know, it's kind of cost him a lot of times in matches when he really should just, I guess, put guys to sleep. So, you know, because he got caught like that a lot of times, and he really switched it up, and we saw it here. I didn't expect the finish, but I, you know, again, you know, Tanahashi is a warrior, and he went out like one.
Yeah, I mean, this match really tells the story of Hiroshi Tanahashi. You know, we know, and we talked about it last week on the previous show, we know he had to give up the title at some point. He needs a rest. He desperately needs a break. He has got nagging injuries that aren't career-threatening, but they could be unless he takes some time off. And if you're going to give a guy a big send-off, Minoru Suzuki's exactly the kind of guy you want, because he knows exactly how to do it. And this was a classic example of how, in a working way, to put somebody out for a long stint, make it worthwhile, and it's a money feud for Tanahashi when he comes back. I will bet you money now Wrestle Kingdom 13 has Minoru Suzuki versus Hiroshi Tanahashi for the Intercontinental Championship on it. Okay, I don't care if Suzuki loses the title between now and then, he'll get it back just for Wrestle Kingdom, because that's money. That's the way you build matches, and Gedo and Jado are old school bookers, and this is exactly how it's supposed to work. And the characteristics of this particular match, Suzuki is the dangerous man. He's the guy that knows every way which way to hurt you, and went through all of them and did it, as you said, in an honorable fashion. He demolished Tanahashi by himself, and Tanahashi never gave up. Red Shoes had to call for the bell because it was getting too dangerous for his long-term career. And that's such a cool story to tell, and it's such a surprising way of doing it. You know, this was the right things to do. Some people could say it's predictable, but there's nothing wrong with predictable if it sells tickets.
No, and like you said, it's straight up and down 100% to the character, because Suzuki does stuff like this all the time. And for him, and again, credit to Don Callis and Kevin Kelly for, you know, always big up in this stuff on the commentary. Like, Suzuki made it a point, like, all the respect in the world to Tanahashi, but, you know, I'm essentially the doom of this promotion now, and if you come back, I will be the end of you. So, like you said, perfect build for, you know, bringing it back to Wrestle Kingdom. And even if he loses up and, you know, down the card leading up to that, it'll still have the heat that it needs, because these two, I mean, you got basically the hero and the big bad of New Japan going against each other.
Yeah, I mean, this was I think it was Callis, yeah, who gave Kevin Kelly gave the translation the next night of his victory speech of, if you ever find a way to stand on your own two feet again, I will be there to knock you down. You know, this is heavy stuff, and it's all about the legacy of New Japan Pro Wrestling and the legacy of this company that Minoru Suzuki has been involved in for nearly 30 years now, on and off. He worked for lots of other different people, but he's a New Japan boy, just like Tanahashi is. He was a young boy too. So yeah, we will move on though to night two, which opened with Katsuyori Kitamura in another of his series matches against Juice Robinson, which he did lose in 9 minutes and 16 seconds. Different kind of match, different kind of style, but again, gives him an opportunity to try and show how he's going to work against different levels of workers in the New Japan system. How do you think he advanced this time, Marcus?
I think it was good. I think he showed a lot of varied offense against somebody like Juice, who is very elusive and, you know, has been growing match by match in his own right. And like I said, Kitamura's really being put to the test in terms of being able to switch on the fly just to these different type of opponents. I didn't know how much he took after Goldberg. But that's cool. But yeah, he got caught again, but you can see him getting better and better with each performance, which is really the point of this. And I think now after this, he's going to be moving into the elder statesmen, if you will, the legends of the roster. So we'll see how he does there with the experience being not on his side.
Exactly. So next we move on to Suzuki-Gun. They defeated New Japan Regular Army. It was El Desperado, Tai Chi, Taka Michinoku, Yoshinobu Kanemura. They defeated Jushin Thunder Liger, Raisuke Taguchi, Shota Umino, and Tiger Mask 4 in 8 minutes and 32 seconds, getting their win back from the previous night. In the usual jump 'em and get going kind of start that Suzuki gonna have, you may have noticed a lack of Zack Sabre Jr. this particular run. They don't tend to book too many of the Gaijins on this particular tour going from the CMLL tour, because they've got lots of CMLL guys they need to look after. So they tend to bring in the ones they need rather than everybody. But this was a lot of fun, I thought. What did you think, Marcus?
Come off of this match, Taguchi, you are... You got to get it together, man. You got to take no for an answer, because you're going to get your team killed. self-killed, I should say. You got to really take it. You're going to get... The next time that Taichi comes at you with that mic, it's gonna stay where he tried to put it. So you might want to back down. But yeah, like you said, another fun little romp. And it was just hilarious and tragic just seeing Taguchi try to... you know, get himself a mate, if you will. So,
I think he said in the press conference afterwards, "I broke my ass." So, yes, we'll move on from there. Next up, it was Tomohiro Ishii and Toriano going against another two members of Bullet Club, Leo Tonga and Yujiro Takahashi. 6 minutes and 16 seconds. The Sublime Master Thief pulls out another one for chaos in such a moment of tag team wrestling we haven't seen since the Midnight Express. Well, probably not. Anyway, Marcus, what do you think of this?
Yeah, for me, I was interested in seeing more from Leo, because obviously when he replaced Kenny, we got some sparks with him, but this was a good little showing for him. And like you said, that Ishii and Yano was really working like a well-oiled machine as they were racking up these victories. But it was cool seeing an outing for Tonga with Yujiro. And I think that's, you know, him learning on the job and getting better with his size and kind of being like perhaps like a mini Fale for the future, if you will. Mm. So we'll see how it works. But yeah, it was fun, you know, shorter than the other two matches, but the right amount of time.
Yeah, that's pretty much it, really. Not a lot can be said to it. Not a lot can be said to the next match either, which was Bullet Club, Bad Luck Fale, Chase Owens, Tama Long, Tonga, and Tanga Loa, who defeated Tomoyuki Oka from the Young Boys, Hiroshi Tenzan, Manabu Nakanishi, who was taking the place of Satoshi Kojima. Get well soon, Satoshi. And Togi Makabe in 9 minutes and 4 seconds. Did what it said on the tin, was there to get Bullet Club over, and that's really what happened. There wasn't awful else to be said about it. It was fine.
Yeah, same here. Kind of seemed like Bullet Club made it seem like light work, so, you know.
Yeah. The next match, though, was a lot more interesting. Suzuki-gun, Minoru Suzuki and Takashi Iizuka defeated Toei Henare and Michael Elgin in 8 minutes and 18 seconds. Now, Henare has just come back off a torn ACL, which is the same injury that, or a similar injury Hiroshi Tanahashi was supposed to have had in the previous evening's wrestling match with Minoru Suzuki. And undoubtedly, Suzuki went after Henare's leg, trying to end the young man's career within the storyline of the match, which made this a much more fascinating watch. Suzuki trying to get himself over as a submission killer he actually is one more time to make his mystique even more presentful, and raising the ire of one Togi Makabe, who hasn't had a singles run in about 2 years, but this made it really worth the wait, I think. Makabe versus Suzuki is something people want to see, and it's something I actually want to see, because I want to see how Makabe is going to cope with Suzuki. What do you think about this, Marcus?
Yeah, same here. That was really the story of the match, really, with Suzuki, you know, continuing to get over that that heel hook. And poor Henry just took all kinds of hell in this match. I generally... and not that really enthused by Elgin, and specifically these days, I'm just trying to ignore him, but I'm glad he provided some backup because of that monster Izuka. just an absolute beast. He's like the unchained wild pit bull of Suzuki Gun. But yeah, I think that was, like you said, the story of the best, Suzuki getting that submission over, and then obviously afterwards, Makabe, another guy who is great, but for me, mostly never really popped off, and I think some of that had to do with some of the feuds. So getting him going against Suzuki, and like you said, seeing how he fares against that just vicious style, I think that's where the money is.
Yeah, definitely. It's interesting because, like, with us doing the Beginner's Guide to Japan, Iizuka was started wrestling for New Japan in around about 1990. So we've seen no end of cards with Iizuka on, and we've watched him develop from this kind of blue-eyed rookie submission machine into this wild man that we see now. And we've also seen Taka Michinoka go from looking after a wild crazy guy at Big Egg Wrestling Universe in 1994, his Tokyo Dome debut, to 23 years later, he's still looking after a wild crazy guy at the Tokyo Dome at Wrestle Kingdom 12. So, you know, the more things change, the more they stay the same. All right, then. Moving on to match 6. A rematch from the previous night. Bullet Club, Cody, Hangman Page, and Marty Scurll defeat Dave Finley, Kota Ibushi, and Kushida. And Cody was still not... Well, Cody still loves Kenny in not the same way that Kota will, apparently. 10 minutes and 30 seconds with a geography lesson at the end of the evening from Marty Scurll saying, Kenny Omega is the United States heavyweight champion, but actually he's Canadian and I'm British. That was that, really. What did you think of this, Marcus?
Yeah, I really liked this match. Damn beautiful finishing sequence, too. With Cody and Hangman. Those two could really go off and do some stuff as a tag team. Obviously, not taking anything away from Scurll, but like I said, that finishing sequence was beautiful. Like I said, Hangman has been, you know, just continuing to get better and better. And him and Dave really shining this match as well. So, yeah, again, but more Bullet Club getting over, Cody doing this thing, Marty Scurll giving a geography lesson. But yeah, it was a dang fun match. But that finishing sequence specifically, for me, really popped off.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think David Finlay really had a really good showing on this particular card, so it was really interesting from that point of view. He hasn't had an interesting showing that good, but I think it's partly because he's going against much bigger stars. So you see him, he rises to the occasion. You know, I'm working in later on the card. I have to work harder. And I think that's worthwhile. All right, then. Match 7 showed Los Ignorables de Japón. They defeated, it was Bushi, Evil, Hiromu Takahashi, and Sanada. And they defeated Tetsuya Naito. Oh, sorry, I'll start that again. Match 7 was Los Ignorables de Japón. The whole of them, Bushi, Evil, Hiromu Takahashi, Sanada, and Tetsuya Naito, as they defeated Chaos, Gedo, Hiroki Goto, Kazuchika Okada, Will Ospreay, and Yoshihashi, with Yoshihashi going after Naito again, 12 minutes and 10 seconds. These guys really don't like each other, and it shows. And the sequences with Okada and Sanada really set up the championship match, which will be on the next New Beginnings card. This was really, really worthwhile. I really enjoyed all of this, and it was a lot of fun to watch. What did you think, Marcus?
100% agree with you. This match just screamed, bring on Osaka. That's basically bring on Osaka, because, I mean, like you said, the tension between these two factions are already great, but then you leading up to these great matches, and you know, Hiromu having it out for Ospreay and Sonata and Okada, and you know, Yoshihashi basically turning into Stone Cold on Naito to kick the match off. It's all around great stuff, and Gato just really being in there to protect the interests of Okada, who apparently is just trying to draw out the potential, and Sonata, who, you know, just saying you still have more to draw out this guy. I mean, wow. You know, like I said, this coming from a guy who got introduced to Sonata and from Impact. So to see where he is now, this has just been fantastic stuff. And this match, again, we could see these two teams fight forever. But yeah, just another great showing, and LIJ got the win this time. But, you know, the real story coming out of this is, you know, will we see Sonata elevate? Because, you know, Okada's been through every possible war you can go through. Nearing it, what, 600 days as champion now?
Yeah.
Something like that. So, yeah, that test, that marathon that he's going on is just fantastic. If Sonata could be the one to dethrone him, I don't think anybody could really be mad, because he really is that next guy. So we'll see, man. But this, like I said, this match just screamed, you know, bring on Osaka. It's going to be a hell of a show.
Yeah, I mean, you said fight forever. Well, these guys will all fight each other in singles matches. Gato has Bushi in a singles match. We have Ospreay versus Takahashi for the junior title. We've got Goto versus Evil for the Never Openweight Championship. Okada will fight Sonata for the IWGP Heavyweight Championship, and Naito versus Yoshihashi in a singles match. It's hell, that's a card, isn't it? Those 10 guys. I mean, Gato, yeah. Gato's no longer the fire-breathing, fuck you with Gato and Jedo Gato he used to be, but he knows how to put an entertaining match together. I still enjoy watching the guy wrestle after watching him wrestle for 25 years. He's still fun to see. He still does fun stuff. I want to see how he's going to do with Bushi, who, and what tricks of the trade he's going to pull out to make an entertaining match with a guy who's 4 inches taller and 20 pounds heavier. I want to see what's going to happen.
Yeah, I think that's an interesting pairing. And for me, you know, somebody who doesn't have a lot of history watching Gato, just seeing him with Okada and as a support system, obviously, you know, finding out he's a booker and whatnot, and seeing the genius that he brings, you know, with these cards, that just leaves me with intrigue, because I want to see what this guy can do, you know, when he's just solo in between those ropes and against a guy like Bushi, who is very unpredictable, but like you said, has a small height and weight advantage. It should be a fun thing at the top of the card, you know, to start the show off. But yeah, for New Japan to keep this momentum up post Wrestle Kingdom is insane, because you would think with other companies this would kind of be the cooling off period and they, you know, lead up into the momentum later in the year, but they're just keeping this stuff going, and you know, Osaka might be one of their best cards of all year.
Yeah, it's going to be pretty incredible. If you want to know more about Jado's career, by the way, if you go back onto some articles I wrote for WrestleTalk.tv, there is an article called Forgotten Tag Teams, the World Class Tag Team, which looks at Gato and Jado and their growth as wrestlers all the way from New Japan Pro Wrestling and All Japan Pro Wrestling, sorry, FMW, where they started, all the way through their UWA run, their Wing run, their IWA run, the War, FMW, ECW, and then back to New Japan Pro Wrestling, the way they rounded out their active in-ring careers, where they're both still active, but not in the world-class tag team way that they used to be. So, yeah, you can find out about them there and how they got to be such great booking minds because of their encyclopedic wrestling knowledge. Okay, cool. Then, we move on to the second-to-last match, match 8 of the evening, which was a championship match. The IWGP Heavyweight Tag Team Championships change hands once again as the Young Bucks drop it in 22 minutes and 34 seconds to Rapingi 3K. Now, we kind of predicted last week between me and the Alexes that this was probably going to keep the belts on the books depending on how long they were available to New Japan Pro Wrestling, because they're only doing big shows for New Japan. They're working Ring of Honor mostly this year. So this was a bit of a surprise for us, but by God, this was a good match. And I think it was actually probably better than their Wrestle Kingdom match. What did you think of this, Marcus?
I 100% agree with you on that. I love this match, and I think my favorite part, one of my favorite parts, to say, of this match came from commentary with Don Callis, who just outright, just 100% put the Bucks over, as, you know, not that he needs to, but just calling anyone who has doubts to criticize, still criticize these guys and says they can't wrestle and can't tell a story, just call them playing out stupid. Anybody, whether the elder statesman in the business or not. Just called it playing out stupid, and Kevin Kelly is 100,000% agreeing with him, because they're right. I mean, this—if you, you know, do not like the Bucks or for whatever reason with the spotty style. This was not that match. This was, you know, the Bucks at their finest. And really some real stuff, because you have to imagine that Matt, you know, back was really messed up. Specifically, really kicked off from that spot when he dived off the stage, which was beautiful, but you could tell the minute he landed that he paid for it. So, you know, I think this is similar to what we saw with Tanahashi and Suzuki. When you are this great and you go at such an elite level for such a long time, something has to give.
Yeah.
And, you know, and that's what happened in this match. And coming off of that Wrestle Kingdom match, telling the story of the back, and with the Bucks, you know, basically applying those crabs to show and yo, and now having it turned around on them in this match, and Nick kind of having to go it alone, and, you know, show and yo really capitalizing, going after, you know, isolating Matt, kicking Nick outside and isolating Matt with those relentless double teams, and him just showing that resilience. But in the end, it kind of really mirrored a lot of the stuff they did with Roppongi.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, another great callback, because we saw the same with Rocky when they initially captured the title. So just a lot of great callbacks, a lot of great history, a lot of great storytelling with the back and everything. And like I said, this was a slower paced match, but this was probably the best match they've had together.
Yeah, definitely. I think I can't wait to see these two tangle again. I'm sure they will. I will say that Roppongi 3K needs some other competition. I'm guessing it's going to come from Suzuki-gun, because I think they're wrestling Kanemura and Desperado on the next card in Osaka, which would be, I think it was probably roughly what happened last year. Roppongi Vice ended up defending against those two. So it's going to be a similar kind of trail again for those guys this year, but there's nothing wrong with that, because there's some cracking junior heavyweight teams available to New Japan Pro Wrestling. They're the Chaos team, you know, there is the Bullet Kid team of the Young Bucks, but there's also a couple of combinations in Suzuki-gun, and obviously you've got people like Tiger Mask and Jushin Liger who can come back, who haven't had a championship shot in about 3 years. So, you know, you can bounce things around, have some interesting matches, and then come back to the Young Bucks later in the year if you need to, or build up another team, which is probably the most advisable thing that they need to do, is to build up some more new teams in the New Japan Junior Heavyweight Tag Team Division.
Agreed.
Okay, then. The main event of the evening for Night 2 in Osaka was Jay White defeating Kenny, the Cleaner Omega of the Elite and Bullet Club, for the IWGP United States Heavyweight Championship in 29 minutes and 54 seconds of a match that may well have saved Jay White's career. This was outstanding. This was not as good as Omega versus Jericho at Wrestle Kingdom, but then again, you know, Chris Jericho has a bit more experience on Jay White by about 27 years. So this was really, 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 really good, though. You know, Jay White's had a lot of criticism since Wrestle Kingdom, and I don't think as much of it is warranted as people think. Once he got that criticism, though, he ran with it. He was on fire at New Year's Dash. He was giving all sorts of very cool interviews. He's been on fire since then at every opportunity he's had. And his work has been exemplary. A fully deserved victory, as Kenny Omega nodded to towards the end of the match. Hangman Page came out and challenged him, but we'll get to that in a second, because there's a whole other bunch of stuff to talk about from when this match ends. Marcus, what do you think of the match first, and then we'll talk about the aftermath?
Yeah, the match itself. I'm a guy who roots for Jay White, because I think, you know, a lot of people kind of saw him as a really, you know, for lack of a better term, kind of plain Jane when it came to a lot of stuff. And then obviously he evolved into this Switchblade character, which has helped. And his in-ring is great. So I think, you know, a lot of his critics kind of just need to stick around and see what he does with this as he gets better. And obviously now he's going to have the opportunity to be showcased a lot more and show a lot more personality, dethroning the King and Omega. And I think one thing that really pointed out to me with this match with Omega, because he is that guy, it is very hard to be somebody like a Kenny Omega who can just pepper the best of them with V-triggers. And I think one thing coming off of another match with another favorite of mine and Juice Robinson, one way for sure that you can beat Omega, one chip in his game, chink in his armor, I should say, is the one-winged angel, because some of his biggest losses have come from people countering out of that one-winged angel. We saw it with Juice, and we saw it here with Jay White coming off the shoulders and going into, you know, the Sister Abigail. So, you know, a great, or the Switchblade, I think he calls it here.
Yeah.
So, going into the Switchblade. So that's the one thing I've really seen consistently with Kenny Omega. If you're going to beat him, you got to count out of that one-winged angel and catch him But yeah, just a great showing, like you said. This was a huge for Jay White. You know, Kenny, you know, is going to be Kenny with or without a belt. So, and he has a lot of things going, like you said, post match after this. So, you know, this is kind of Jay White's time to really get himself, you know, in a secure spot amongst the elite in New Japan. So yeah, I think this was a good showing for him. And while he goes off with one prize, Kenny has the potential to gain something else post-match. So.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, as well, I also like the way that this match was a callback to the Suzuki match. Like, Omega has Jay White controlled. He has him, like, demolished, but he can't put him away. And it's hubris that costs him the championship. It's not anything that Jay White did necessarily. He just took his opportunity, but Kenny let him have that opportunity. It was Kenny's mistake that cost him the championship, which is much more, well, it's protective of Kenny for a start, because it means that Jay White didn't beat him. Kenny Omega beat Kenny Omega. But equally, it does mean that, you know, there's a sense of, like, maybe is this the right direction to go? You've kind of started believing your own hype. Wrestling God, as Don Callis calls you. Are you really a wrestling god? Are you better than Carl Gotch? Are you better than Antonio Inoki? Are you better than Shinya Hashimoto? Maybe not. So I like the way that story was told, and I like the way the they did that. Now, in the post-match, what happened was Hangman Page came down to challenge Jay White for the United States Heavyweight Championship and took the belt from him to challenge him for it. But Kenny whipped it out of Hangman Page's hands and handed it back to Jay, saying, best man won on the day, get you next time, which is fine. And then Cody came down to have a go at Kenny about ruining Hangman Page's moment, because it was a time-honored tradition in New Japan that the challenger comes down to the ring and challenges the champion. And that's fine, but they get into an argument. The Young Bucks come down to side with Kenny, but Kenny turned around, shoves Matt onto his sore back after they've just lost the championship. They get talking. They get shouting at each other. Marty Scurll tries to calm them down. Adam Page tries to calm them down. And then eventually they decide, we'll deal with this man-to-man, Cody and Kenny. And Cody says, we're okay, we're okay. And as Kenny climbs out the ring, Cody blindsides him. Hangman Page comes down and he tries to help Kenny out. But Cody says, no, you hold him and I'll clobber him. The Bucks are nowhere to be found. Marty Scurll is trying to stop things, and then eventually the Golden Star, Kota Ibushi, comes down to ringside and saves his best friend Kenny Omega in one of the most blisteringly hot angles I've seen in New Japan Pro Wrestling for a long time. Fans have wanted the return of the Golden Lovers for 2 or 3 years now. When Kenny Omega went to New Japan in the first place, there was disappointment that he was going to debut as a heel with Bullet Club. People wanted to see this tag team together, and now they've pulled the trigger on it. It could be something really special indeed. Marcus, what's your thoughts on this post-match segment?
Obviously, we've seen tension teased with between Cody and Omega dating back to that big show. When he initially won the U.S. strap, but maybe a little before that, but yeah, this has been something consistent. But I'll tell you, the one moment during this whole segment when Omega pushed Matt down, I gotta believe I had the same face that you see the kid in the commercial that gets the ice cream knocked out of his hand. it was that devastating for me, because the coming to the end of an era with that, but because I'm not really that accustomed to, you know, anything with the Golden Lovers, which sounds like a very popular adult film somewhere in this world.
We'll get to that in a minute.
Yeah, they're very odd, but I mean, it makes perfect sense if you've seen Kenny Omega pre-cleaner. So, yeah, I mean, that was a hell of a moment, and you know, Kota made a beeline for the ring. It was great, and Cody did his thing with the betrayal, as, you know, you've really been teasing that, like I said, for so long now. So the match has finally been pulled on that. We're going to get that match. But, yeah, the potential for Omega, and like you said, I think a great thing is if Omega has been kind of getting caught up in his own hype, this will be a good way to kind of bring him down off of that. You know, being with a Bushi who kind of just goes with the flow and just puts on top performances no matter what place he's in and doesn't really put too much pressure on himself in terms of bringing a company on his back and bringing it to the forefront like Omega wants to. So I think bringing these two together will be fresh. But the real fallout here is what's going to happen with, you know, Bullet Club, because this could really be the ending to things, because it's very split, you know, except for, you know, the villain. I think maybe everybody else is kind of with Cody. So we'll see what comes of that. This is another one of those tests for Bullet Club, because this isn't a traditional kicking out.
No, then that's the layer of the story. I mean, it's like if you watch Being the Elite this week, you know, in the build-up to the match, Matt Jackson's talking to Kenny and said, hey, we've had dissension and we've never had dissension anymore. I mean, when AJ and Fergal were... Oh. So, you know, they were kind of playing up to the fact that, well, Fergal didn't have this dissension, he wouldn't allow it, and AJ wouldn't have this dissension and he wouldn't allow it. However, if you go back in New Japan history... Who was kicked out the Bullet Club? Who kicked AJ Styles out the Bullet Club? It was the Young Bucks. Who kicked Fergal Devitt out of Bullet Club? It was the Young Bucks. They took executive decisions and they didn't do it with Kenny because they're too close to him. That's something that plays into the Young Bucks storyline. Marty Scurll's trying to play Peacemaker. That still plays into his storyline. Everybody gets something out of this. Now, the person that gets the most out of this is Kenny Omega, obviously, but also Kota Ibushi as well. Rather tellingly, at the end of Being the Elite this week, Kota Ibushi appears by the side of Kenny Omega and they knock on the door of the Young Bucks hotel room, who let them in for a chat. So it may not be the end of the Elite, but it may be the end of the Elite in Bullet Club. We shall see. What do you think of those moments, though, there? Because I'm not sure if you've seen Being on the Elite or not, Marcus.
No, I didn't. I'm going to probably check it out after the show. But, yeah, I mean, that's interesting to hear. Like you said, that it would be a shame for that, you know, that bond between Omega and the Bucks to end, because that's really been a proving factor and really another momentum uptake for Bullet Club has been, you know, the Elite, you know, doing what they've done in both Ring of Honor and New Japan and kind of taking it upon themselves to kind of create a different buzz, you know, with the three of them. So hopefully that doesn't come to an end. But yeah, this is very interesting, because this is not, like you said, the usual for Bullet Club. And it's funny that Jackson would say, you know, the Bucks would talk about not having dissension when they are the main people who are kicking people out of the Bullet Club. So you know, they did it with Cole, they did it with AJ. That's their thing. They kick you out of the Bullet Club, literally. So, you know, that's going to be interesting going forward. And who knows, maybe we'll see a thing with them and Kota and Omega going against the Bullet Club. It's going to be sad, because I feel like, you know, everybody else is a parent and Skrull's just a kid. Skrull's just the villain baby that has to go with one of the households. So it's going to be fun seeing how this rolls out. Obviously, I think Cody and Omega are going to kind of finish this thing up in the Ring of Honor, so that'll be interesting.
Someone did come up with that family analogy before, and I described the Young Bucks as the stern dad of Bullet Club, because they're the ones that make sure everybody's sorted out and looks after themselves.
Yeah.
So yes, maybe that is Marty Scurll is the son in the middle of the divorce. There's just too many analogies going on with this. Brilliantly terrible bit of commentary from Don Callis at the end of this match, saying that Kota Ibushi and Kenny Omega have something that goes beyond wrestling, that's stronger than wrestling. Don, why don't you just say the bisexual and get it over with? Okay. I understand what you're trying to do. You're trying to leave some mystery there in an old school fashion. But let's be honest, nobody has naked photo shoots together if there isn't something going on there. That's my call on it, and there's absolutely nothing wrong with it, and it makes it wonderful and gorgeous, and it's the best love story in wrestling. That's just me.
This is news to me, but Don...
Seriously, you didn't know this?
Because I did catch that at the end. I was like, okay, just come all out with it, because he does that from time to time, alludes to a lot of things, trying to play up to it, and obviously because Kevin Kelly is a consummate professional, he always just shoots it down and just goes on to the next thing, like a professional would. So that and that's really what makes them click the way they do. But yeah, that's news to people. Like you said, it doesn't matter. just say it. I mean, this is New Japan, where you can curse on commentary, which is like for me, like opening up a present on Christmas because of the wrestling I'm used to on a weekly basis. So,
you know. Dude, I just wanted some old grizzled veteran next to him just going, they're gay, Don. It's okay. They're gay. Leave it at that. But no, we got the nicely alluding version. And it is like, literally, if you love, like, have a like a scattershot approach to all the New Japan fans outside of Japan that follow it, most of them are really, really happy that this storyline's happening. You know,
yeah.
Obviously Chelsea, who is a massive fan of this storyline and is very up on LGBT storylines in pro wrestling and really enjoys this kind of stuff, for quite rightly, because it doesn't get represented enough. This is the ideal case scenario for presenting a storyline in this manner. It's a love story, okay, between Kota Ibushi and Kenny Omega, which has spanned from their years in DDT. In fact, to be honest with you, I floated an idea, a conspiracy theory, if you will, and I'm going to bring it back up again now because it's actually coming true. I can't remember when I said this, but my kind of conspiracy theory was that Kota Ibushi only went to the WWE for the Cruiserweight Classic to give Kenny Omega time to establish himself in New Japan Pro Wrestling so that when he came back, could have the love story and tell the love story they wanted to on the biggest stage they possibly could, and was actually working Triple H, and that's the reason why he didn't sign. And it's looking more and more likely to be true day by day.
that's so great. And that, I mean, you know, when you look at back some of them interviews that Omega had when he's, you know, because he's really been going on this trail of kind of just kind of shunning everything that's going on in WWE. And rightfully so, he doesn't need to go there. But yeah, initially, the spark of that was, you know, talking about that Cruiserweight Classic and kind of just, you know, really not taking away the credibility from it, but like, you know, why would I necessarily do that? And to have Kota be one of the guys that probably would have won it had he, you know,
played the game.
Allowed WWE to court him the way they wanted to. That would have been a huge sticking point. So for him to come back and do his thing, and you to bring up that story, that would be great and easily something New Japan could weave into the story. So
yeah, definitely. So this was a couple of very fun cards that lay up Osaka beautifully with that 5-match Chaos versus LIJ series. We're going to tie up all the loose ends, or maybe start some more loose ends. We will see what happens. Any predictions, Marcus?
No, I'm just going to sit back and enjoy this one, man. But maybe at this point, I'm not going to bet. I mean, I'm a Sonata guy, but betting against Okada, that's just bad money.
Yeah.
at this point. So, yeah, I'm just going to, you know, other than that, I'm just going to go sit back and enjoy the show, not really make any bets because New Japan, while they are predictable in some manners, in others they are completely unpredictable, as we got with this show. So I'm kind of just going to sit back and enjoy the show.
Okay, then. We hope you do too. That's on February the 10th, I believe. I will put it in the link below. I will probably link up that article I had about Gato and Jado as well in the link on the SoundCloud. You may be able to see it on iTunes. I'm not really, really sure. Thank you for listening to The Troopany Show this week. You can find us on Twitter, at Troopany Show, on Facebook, The Troopany Show. I am at Sheriff Lone Star on Twitter. I'd like to thank my guest and co-host for today, Mr. Marcus Green of Total Wrestling Magazine, who's at Paradox Kid on Twitter. Thank you, sir.
Thank you for having me, man. It was a great show.
We will be back next week, and we'll be looking at Big Egg Universe and the Beginner's Guide to Japan. Please, please, please do support our Patreon page. It helps us keep the running costs of the Troopany Show free forever for everyone, which is what we're aiming for. Thank you very much for listening this week. Take care, and we'll see you soon. Bye!